ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Two Norries podcast. Today I'm your host, Timmy, and James, my good friend, is my co-host today. Yeah. So today we have a very special guest. Her name is Sasha Roos. Sasha is an expert in dyslexia, and we had a conversation before we came up here today, and she corrected me on my spelling or my wording around dyslexia, because I would have always classified it as an intellectual disability, but she explained to me something else earlier and it made a lot of sense, you know. So I'll just tell you a little bit about Sasha. She is an author and a dyslexia specialist supporting people with challenges of dyslexia. She has a well-established private practice and an approach that encourages the strengths and abilities of the dyslexic individual. She is a member of the Dyslexia Association of Ireland, the Institute of Guidance Counsellors, and the Society of Authors. There's my one coming out. But so I'm going to let you jump in here and just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you may have got involved with dyslexia and why you're so passionate about helping people with it.
Yes, thanks. It was by chance, really. I was trained to be a guidance counsellor, and at the same time, a friend suggested that I go into dyslexia tuition, just as a sideline. But then it just really grew, and I saw that there was a real need, particularly for help with teenagers with dyslexia. And so I then established my private practice over 15 years ago. And then eventually I wrote my book, At Home with Dyslexia, and it came out, UK publisher, 3 years ago, because I could see there was a need, because dyslexia is genetic. A lot of books out there don't really suit parents of dyslexics who want to find out about it. A lot of books put teachers and parents together, and they're very wordy books, and they're just not going to look at it. They're not going to read it. So I interviewed my students and parents, and so their voices are through the book. So it's all cork voices, parents and children.
Would it be fair to say that some of the parents that have dyslexic children may actually have dyslexia as well and recognize themselves, you know?
Totally, all the time.
And there's more and more children with dyslexia these days, because we can notice it a lot more within schools because there's more awareness around it, you know. What does a parent with a dyslexic child, what do they look out for? How do they notice it? And where do they get the help they need and to help that child?
Well, if they're in primary level, I'd say trust your gut feeling, actually, and look at where there's dyslexia in the family, quite possibly, because it's definitely genetic. And look at how your child is maybe good at some things and not so good at others, maybe quite articulate, but can't transfer those thoughts onto the page, can't do rote learning. So as we were saying before, the main issue with dyslexia is the short-term memory, a poor working memory. So, you know, we can deal with the reading and writing side of things, but if they struggle with the spellings, the Friday spellings, you know, they learn them and then they forget them. Or learning their times tables, any rote learning is very hard for them. And then later on, it kind of manifests as a poor working memory. You know, they can study, but it just goes. So that would be the sure sign, really, of dyslexia.
And the short-term memory, we spoke about that a while ago, and I was explaining that just before an exam, when I was in college, just before any of my exams, I would be studying and studying and studying for days and days and days. And the next day I'd look at the same thing and I would have forgot about it. And I'd have to cramp everything in within the half an hour, just quick bullet points, and go into the exam and just try to remember the bullet point. And that'll give me a little understanding of what I might write, you know, and then I'd be scribbling like mad, and pages scribbling out like, but, where did the short term, can you tell us a little bit more about the short term memory stuff?
Yeah, so the main thing is that a dyslexic person would have abilities in certain part of their brain that others wouldn't have. So you're going to be more visual spatial, like you are definitely a visual spatial learner. You found it easy, the practical side of things. Yeah. You're also a kinesthetic tactile learner. So you learn by doing and making, fidgeting, things like that. Do you have a spinny chair? Things like that. So you found now probably how you learn. But when you were studying, you didn't know what your learning style was. No. So I think all children need to know what their learning style is. And we need to have multisensory learning. And so they can get things from the short-term memory into their long-term memory. Because there'll be some things that you're really good at knowing. Like you have some stuff in your long-term memory that's just brilliant.
Yeah.
So you need to use those abilities to deal with the short-term memory difficulties.
Well, I've noticed that when I there's a lot of stuff. If say for instance at work, you know, and if I don't do a roof in a while, I forget the mathematical side of it, how to get the pitch and stuff like that. But once I get it, I get it. I keep going. But I've noticed that I have a repetitive mind. No, I know. But when we hit a certain age, we only learn through repetition. But I have that repetitive mind. If I keep doing it, I'll know it. You know,
I'm kind of anti that traditional approach. Yeah. You know, that old thing of writing out your spellings 10 times, 40 times, 50 times doesn't really work for dyslexic because then they don't notice when they make a mistake. Mm. It doesn't really work for them. So like, for example, with the younger children, they would break down a word into sections. They would use colour. They would create pictures, do a visual strategy for it. And then they would picture it in their mind's eye, which is very important because they've got usually a visual strength. And then they would write it in sand or make it with Play-Doh or pipe cleaners or something like that. And that will be multisensory and that will get it into their long-term memory. Mm-hmm. But rote learning, repetition, it's a long, inefficient way of learning for
them. On a practical level, though, it's different, though. Do you know, for
kinesthetic, you're doing movement and that helps you. Yeah.
You know, for people like myself that don't have dyslexia or know very little, I think a common perception would be that if people look at this wonderful book, sometimes we believe that what I see is different to what somebody with dyslexia sees. Is that a myth?
What do you mean?
Like the letters aren't jumbled around.
No. Oh, okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did you ever come across that myth?
Yes, that myth is really annoying because visual stress is something separate to dyslexia, but quite often dyslexics have visual stress as well. And visual stress is when you get the jumbling of letters, maybe some blurring, things like that. And that scientifically, I mean, I'm not really up on this, but there's a colour in the light spectrum that causes the problem. So they get filtered lenses to filter out. So you could get some filtered lenses that will filter out the colour that causes the problem. You won't see a different colour. You'll see normally through the lenses. Mm-hmm. And it will just calm the environment down, calm the page down so that you can read it and take in what you're reading as well. Because they could read things endlessly and it just won't go in.
Yeah.
So there's a huge myth around, you know, and the old jokes as well, you know, the amount of times I've heard the dyslexic joke, which is always the same one because it's always just mixing the words between dog and god or whatever, you know. It's like, okay, it's not funny.
Sorry, James. Go on. It's another thing just stood out for me. Say, for example, if I was reading a book, a story, somebody's story or a fiction, really powerful, kind of strong, like, and a book pops to my mind, it was The Celestine Prophecies, which was a spiritual book. Great book, very good book. But I was able to read that book because I was drawn to it. But if I'm reading a self-help book, then like The Power of Now or any of these books, I can't retain any of that information. It just, I think
that book is a very abstract book, and I think, you know, a lot of people might find that difficult, but probably if you have dyslexia, it's probably harder. You know, or is abstract thought more difficult if you have dyslexia?
They can be quite logical. Like a bit of structure and things like, and things like spellings, you know, the silent letters in words have no logic, so that's very difficult for them. And they're often quite mathematical, so you could have been quite good at maths. Sometimes they're not, but quite often I would have students that are really, really good at maths.
I think Timmy is good at maths.
I wouldn't be bad at that's from,
like, if we're doing any, if there's any equations or we're doing anything around accounts or measuring, like, say a few numbers to Timmy, he has it there and then, like, right, this is the number, you know what I mean? Like, and I'd be like, I could not do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Numbers is a massive part of a carpenter's day, you know, because we're measuring square meters, cubic meters, we're measuring lengths, you know, so you constantly have a tape in your hand taking measurements and writing them down. So it's consistent, and then calculations then as well on top of that.
I'd find that really difficult. I'm not dyslexic. I'd find that really difficult. So, you know, that's why also coming back to the language of dyslexia, which is a big thing for me. And in my book, I always call it a learning difference. It's not a disability because you can't say people like Einstein or Bill Gates or Steve Jobs or Picasso or Newton, or, I mean, the list is endless of famous, you know, successful dyslexic. Every single field has a dyslexic person at the top. I don't see that as a coincidence. There's something about the dyslexic brain that when they find what they're good at, they go for it, and they're very determined, and they find out, you know, they're good problem solvers, they find alternative ways and solutions to things. They can see things differently. And I think, you know, if we didn't have dyslexics in the world, and 10% of the population have dyslexia, I don't know what our world would be like. It'd be pretty boring. It'd be really, I don't know. We wouldn't have half of our inventions. The Wright brothers. I don't know what
gravity,
our world would be.
By Isaac Newton.
Charles Darwin.
But like, does the diagnosis go back centuries?
Leonardo da Vinci.
Really?
Yeah. So we know now from looking at their papers and things like that, that they had dyslexia. We know that.
Were they aware of it? Like, when was the term coined? And do you know, like, when did the first diagnosis was?
This is the problem, really. And I have a problem with the invention of the printing press. When they decided that reading and writing were the skills that everyone had to have, and you had to learn to read and write. Whereas before that, people needed to be able to build arches for cathedrals and churches and things. So you would have been really somebody they needed. And then suddenly the printing press is invented, and it's like, hang on a minute, you need to learn to do this. And you're like, oh my God.
So is that kind of where it began?
I'd say, I don't know, when was it coined, dyslexia? It was called word blindness. Sort of put, I think, in the 19th century. And it kind of, that negative thing just went from there, and we still have that. It's still called disability. You know, you succeeded despite your dyslexia rather than because of your dyslexia. And that's the wrong way of looking at it.
Do you know, somebody created a Wikipedia page for me and Timmy, which is cool, because, you know, I think you have to pay €100 to do it, and you have to go your way, so fair play. But in it, they describe Timmy as having severe dyslexia. What was your thoughts behind a term like that?
I don't like it. I know it's used a lot, but I don't really like it because it sounds negative.
Is it on a spectrum? Like, can you have mild dyslexia?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can be down one end and up the other end for sure. But then I wonder, like the girl I was talking about earlier who's doing astrophysics, you know, you could say, yes, her dyslexia is really severe. She would say that she can hardly read. And yet now she's doing astrophysics because she's got those dyslexic abilities. So is it like severe dyslexia, maybe that is like really good dyslexia.
Yeah.
Because she's very dyslexic.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's like the term of autism. This is some autistic people and kids are so smart and creative in other ways in their lives. Like it's like looking at the two things. No, I know they're completely different in different ways. Like, but it would be looking at it like that, wouldn't it be very similar?
Yeah, you know? And where we're going wrong still is that there's not enough training for teachers. You know, there's not enough knowing how to spot it, knowing how to intervene at an early age. So then it affects people so much, like your own experience in primary school. That's where it really, because you're so exposed in primary school, you know, you've got to read, you've got to reach all these levels and they're not, but they're intelligent enough to see what's going on because dyslexics are average or above average intelligence. Mm. So that self-esteem issue carries on to adulthood. Again, this old student of mine who's doing astrophysics, even though she'd be getting H1, she got an H1 in her English just now, she would still feel she was going to fail because of her negative experiences in her first primary school, where she was put at the back and doing baby work and made to feel stupid.
How do people with dyslexia achieve academically with the reading and the writing? Like, what supports are in place, or how do you navigate it?
Well, luckily now we have assistive technology. Mm. So they can have...
get the computer to read it.
Yeah, they get iPads and laptops more and more in school. So their textbooks, they can have audio versions of their textbooks. They can have speech to text. They can dictate their answers, their notes.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as they access the information in some way and can produce the information, what they want to produce in some way... Do they need to be able to be a fluent reader?
Mm.
And I mean, it's nice if they are, but there are other ways of showing their intelligence.
And in the university I went to here in UCC, there was a lady in my class that had dyslexia. She was actually only diagnosed with it in there, but she got to sit the exams in a different room, you know, with some help. So, you know, if people that are watching the podcast or listening to the podcast, adults that have dyslexia, and they think like, they could never go into education, like there'd be a lot of support provided, and you know it's not the block you think it is. You know, it's just something that you'll navigate, but you can actually succeed very well with it.
And I think third level is where it gets better. You know, I'd say probably primary is the most exposing, although there's more kind of maybe awareness in primary and supports. And at least in secondary, they can usually find the subjects that they're good at and focus on them. Mm. And then third level, definitely much better. There's much more way of supports and there are ways around it. Definitely.
What about kids, you know, with parents? There's actually no shame in having a child with dyslexia.
No, we still have a bit of that around the place, but we don't.
I've noticed it like in some parents think, oh, my child is dyslexic, he's going to struggle for the rest of his life academically, and what are we going to do? And like, it's not a bad thing to be dyslexic. It's not in any way. We've, as you said there, the assistive technologies we have today, like the Dragon and Ginger and all these different things for spelling. You can get covers now for laptops and desks where it's softer, as you were speaking earlier, we can read easier. And I've noticed your book isn't white. If that was white, no, I couldn't. I'd be looking at that and I'd be getting blurry-eyed.
Oh, it's off-white.
Yeah, it's off-white.
I was very particular about that. Because it's a UK publisher and I got them to send me the paper to make sure it felt right as well. And that it wasn't shiny. And of course, most textbooks are white and shiny.
What's the problem with visual stress?
Well,
white is a problem for people that have dyslexia?
No. People with visual stress.
Oh.
And some people with dyslexia have visual stress.
Oh, I see.
Which is the white bouncing off and the light and everything else. So that's why black and white print particularly would be really difficult for them. And they, like a lot of my students, prefer blue paper and yellow paper and things like that.
The yellow would be something that I would like.
You like that.
And the other thing as well is I'd have a little card and you'd read the lines individually, because I used to skip the top of a paragraph, a page,
yeah,
and go up to the bottom and try to get the end of the story to make it faster. So I'd just finish. Then I'd be reading two lines into the bottom paragraph. So I'm after missing three paragraphs. I said, fuck, whoops. And then I'd give out to myself and say, I have to go back up the top now and read that. And it was just never something that I really liked doing, the reading section.
And you couldn't take in what you were reading.
That's why I didn't like it.
Focused on just the act of reading the words. Yeah. You just reading the word was enough.
The act of doing, that's, I've never heard anyone explain it like that before. I was so annoyed with the act of actually reading because I knew I wasn't going to understand the wording and what it meant, that I just hated doing it. I have to read it again. I still wouldn't understand it. It's the same with certain words. Certain words I just cannot, for the life of me, understand. You know, I'll get it, then I'll forget it, then I'll get it, I'll be able to spell it, then I'll forget how to spell it again. And it's just different things happen.
Yeah.
You know, so, going back to what I initially did say, it was about the kids. Like, some kids would have dyslexia, and the parents, like, would thinking, is it a really, really bad thing? What would you say to those parents, Sasha?
It's difficult to get rid of those views when the media always sensationalises it. We've still got that media saying about famous dyslexics, oh, they struggled with dyslexia, and despite their dyslexia, they achieved, you know, actors like Orlando Bloom, people like that, who would talk positively about the dyslexia, but the media always makes that hype around it. And we need to change the language around it, really, and for them to see those messages, which are, it is getting better. There's organisations, particularly in the UK, that are looking at the positives of dyslexia and seeing how they are the movers and shakers actually in society, if we could only see it like that. But it is still going to take time. I mean, I've got friends who are primary school teachers in England, and in their training with special needs, you know, dyslexics don't get called special needs, but children at risk of dyslexia. I mean, that's an awful, like, it's
what
a
does that
disease.
Even mean?
Yeah. And this is now.
You can't be at risk of dyslexia. You either have it or you don't.
Exactly. And it sounds really scary,
a
then, doesn't
it? Contagious or something.
Yes, like a disease. And like saying diagnosis, actually, because then it sounds like a disease. So I don't like saying that either.
Yeah. What about the language around this? Like, is it he is dyslexic or he has dyslexia? In disability language, you would say, I've heard somebody saying the appropriate thing to say is child with autism rather than autistic child, because there's still a person that has this condition or has this complexity. But when you say, like, or even in somebody in addiction, he is an addict or he is a person with addiction would be more suitable, because you're labeling somebody, you know what I mean? He is dyslexic. No, he's a person with dyslexia. He's still a person. He just has this editing. Is that important?
That's a good point, actually, because there'd be some organisations or some people say, well, you can't say dyslexics or to say, you know, you've got to say person with, you know, dyslexia. And then it comes a bit sort of too sort of pussyfooting around it, really. Mm. And we don't want that. And dyslexics who are, see, I just say dyslexics, if they're comfortable around it, which is what we want, they don't care about that. And also, when they find out they're dyslexic, they usually feel relief, because then it makes sense. I mean, I don't know if you felt relief, but that explains it now. Mm. I'm not stupid. Mm. It's just I've got a different way of thinking and processing. It might take me a bit longer to process certain things, but once it's there, it's there. And look, I've got all these other abilities, so I'm going to focus on my strong areas.
So the signs and symptoms really is predominantly the memory piece.
It is, yeah.
So, you know, if somebody's listening to the podcast and they can identify with some of the signs and symptoms you explain, how do you go about going and getting checked? Who do you go to and what's the process like?
See, it's a difficult one because educational psychologists would be so expensive.
Mm.
And you could do it through school. I think you'd have to talk to educational psychologists about it, but I think there's more and more assessors who would do it in school and things like that.
But
because you do want a label, you know, you do, because then you can And there's nothing wrong with having that label, because then you can get the reasonable accommodations in your exams. You get a spelling and grammar waiver. You could get a reader. You get rest breaks, your own room.
And if you wanted to go to college or university, the access office would provide that service, you know, to help you, I guess.
Yeah, the disability office at UCC, whatever, and to give you support.
I was going to say is, isn't it very important to be able to catch a child at a really young age and find out if they're dyslexic and they can get the help that they need instead of going through 4 or 5 years where they're completely struggling and they start believing that they're stupid or tick or whatever. And that just changed, that'll change their whole life then and their future, because instilled within them then is the thought that they're tick.
Yeah.
But they mean they're not. It's just that they have dyslexia and it has gone undiagnosed by somebody. And you spoke about assessors there. Has an assessor got the same authority as an educational psychologist to diagnose somebody as dyslexic, or is it just the educational psychologist?
I think it's an but you'd have to really get somebody on and get
and they are expensive. They are, and I'll tell you, like, I paid €550 in the college and I had to get a loan off the student union outside, and they paid for it for me.
There are schools would have a NEP psychologist coming in as well. But things changing all the time, so I think you probably need to speak to other people who would be up on that at the moment. Mm.
But it's not a bad idea to be bringing educational psychologists into school to catch kids, like have a chat with teachers, educate teachers around dyslexia.
This is a huge thing. And as you say about getting them at an early age, there needs to be more training for teachers on how to spot it and how to deal with it. There's definitely not enough. I mean, it's getting better, but there still needs to be more, definitely, because the stories I hear from my students. What really frustrates me is the low expectations that are put on people with dyslexia. Mm. Oh, you're dyslexic, so you can't do that.
Yeah.
Do ordinary level English, obviously, because you're dyslexic. And it's like, no, why shouldn't they do higher level if they want to?
Mm.
Why shouldn't they be in this class if they want to?
I have a good question for you.
Here we go.
Oh, what?
So, do you know when, say, for instance, myself, when I done my exam, okay, a normal assessor corrected it, my exam paper. No, he mightn't have known I was dyslexic or not. Should there be an exam assessor that knows about dyslexia? Oh, I might be going a little bit too forward to correct these in terms of how the person lacks certain forms of what's the right word, James?
It's just like, do you know when you have dyslexia and you sit an exam and it goes to the person that's correcting it? Is the label on it?
Mm. There is, I think. If you've got a spelling and grammar waiver, I think in your exams, don't they still have a sticker on it to say
would,
that you
would
are?
Be better? Would it be better for one definitely. Of the... So if the person correcting it has dyslexia as well, they can have some little bit of compassion around that as well and understand
that.
It.
Yeah, I don't think that matters if they have dyslexia themselves. Yeah. But actually, it does help when teachers have dyslexia too, because then they're very good at teaching in multi-sensory ways.
Yeah.
Mm. And that works for the children.
And bringing it down a notch, because in third level education, I've came across lecturers, okay, that were extremely smart.
Mm.
And they'd expect everybody sitting in front of them to be as smart as them, and they'd teach you on their level. And I'm saying, where is this guy going? Like, I haven't a clue what he's even saying. One sticks out in particular, like, I had to write down, I spent more time writing down words inside in his class, that I didn't understand, instead of taking down notes. And I'd go after the class, then I'd try to understand the words and, you know, I'd look at the dictionary and I'd say, how am I going to cope here? It's like I was doing triple the work of every other student inside in the room.
Dyslexics, on average, work 4 times harder than anybody else just to keep up. And they are exhausted after a day in school or a week in school or whatever. Mm. But you are smart. I mean, How long did it take you to get from junior cert to third level?
Mm.
You are smart. And there is there are certain dyslexic traits like determination. You know, they are very focused, very determined. You've got those entrepreneurial abilities. These are all dyslexic abilities. Mm-hmm. The visual, spatial.
Yeah. There's another thing. It's that fear factor, that risk taker as well. I'd be a risk. I've taken risks all my life. You know, it's just jump in, see how hot the water is. If it gets boiling, jump back out and go somewhere else.
I think that's just your personality, Tim.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
No, but that's just Timmy. Yeah.
But they definitely don't follow the crowd or anything like that, I would say.
I suppose that's a terrible thing to say. I was going to say, would they be? Would a lot of dyslexic people be introverts? Would they be?
No.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you think of the likes of Einstein and a few of the other guys, we were talking about, like, a lot of people back then would have said, like, these fellas are absolutely nuts because they were thinking outside the box.
Outside the box, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah. I'd say it can be, it might damage confidence and self-esteem in children, but when you're an adult and you can kind of get control of it, or at least find ways that you can help yourself, maybe you can get a bit better. But what can parents do to help? What practical things can they do to help their children that may have dyslexia?
Well, there's a load in my book.
I know there is.
It's a parent's guide. There's lots of things they can do. Focusing on multi-sensory things, so having Play-Doh and sand and coloured sticky post-its and highlighters and pens that you can rub out as well. There's loads of those these days. They don't have to have lots of squiggly crossing outs and things in their work. Coloured flashcards of all different ages. You know, I think provide the equipment for them to be multi-sensory. Allow them to learn the way they want to. You know, if they want to run around, fidget, they're all fidgeters, spinning chairs, whatever, and play music. You know, things that you don't think would actually work may well work for them. Mm-hmm. You know, they need music to concentrate. So it's just being open to creative ways of learning and helping stuff going from the short-term memory to the long-term memory. In terms of reading and things like that, that's a hard one. A lot of them don't enjoy reading. It's a real shame. But if they, you know, you could get games where there's reading involved. You could watch cartoons with subtitles, all sorts of different ways of getting them to read.
Isn't it a shame the education system kind of really rewards those that are very good or that find reading and writing easier, and it leaves a whole cohort of young people kind of outside of that, you know, and maybe before the printing press, like you spoke about, wasn't such a big issue.
No.
But now all of a sudden there's huge rewards given to those that can achieve academically or find it to do well in school, but maybe some people are more musical or more hands-on and more kinesthetic, as you said.
Yeah.
But they're not rewarded the same way as...
Yeah, exactly. So. And things are getting better, but there's still that thing, oh, you've got to do well in those reading, writing skills and languages, when it's not their area. And they could go on and on doing French and so like that, but it just reaches a plateau and they struggle with it because it's not logical. There's lots of silent letters, whatever. And really what they should be focusing on is their strong subjects, which could be maths, could be English, and maybe more the practical visual spatial subjects, engineering, woodwork, metalwork.
When we were talking about the engineering, they'd be classified as really smart.
There's so many dyslexic engineers and architects. That's a huge profession for dyslexics.
And they're some of the best well-paid jobs in the country. Some of the architects there and the engineers are on serious money. They're running some of the biggest jobs in the country, you know. So there you go. There's dyslexics there now for you.
I don't know what we do without them. Yeah, and yet we sort of condemn them in the classroom and they feel stupid, which is just ridiculous and sad.
Do you know, you spoke about something a while ago, the determination of someone who's dyslexic to really understand something. I can really relate to that, and I think it's it's a great attribute to hold as a person, is that determination. Because without being dyslexics, a lot of people wouldn't have that determination, do you know, that drive to keep them going forward.
Once you know what you're good at, then you go for it. And the thing also is, because they can't do rote learning, they can't just cram and just learn something off. They have to understand it. They have to know it. They have to understand it. So they're working really hard to learn a science topic or something so that they really, they get it, they understand it, and it goes into long-term memory.
Mm.
And that's kind of better. That's a better way of learning than just cramming it.
And regurgitating the exam data then.
And they're the ones that get all the high grades, but do they really know the stuff? Are they really any good?
I know.
Yeah. And let's talk a small bit about something we spoke about a while ago, about the intellectual disability thing again. You know, you think it's not an intellectual disability, it's a learning difficulty.
No, it's not even that. It's a learning difference.
Learning difference, okay.
Yeah.
So, are we starting to change back from that? Like, from the intellectual disability, are we starting, is society kind of looking at it as a learning difference? Are we way away from that?
It's definitely never, I don't think it's ever been seen as intellectual disability, because it's not, they're not below average IQ, people with dyslexia. So it's not an intellectual thing, but it is still called a disability. It definitely is. And unfortunately, you know, to get the supports in school and things like that, it's called a disability.
Mm. Yeah.
So, you know, what do you do? It's...
Because even in the college, when we were going there, it was the Disability Services.
Yeah.
You know, that was the name, the DSS, but, you know...
And a lot of my students who would be very comfortable about the dyslexia, they just laugh at that. They just think that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Disability. You know, they see it as an attribute.
Yeah.
One of my students, I remember her saying, you know, the only thing I don't like about having dyslexia is that people don't understand it.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they'll understand it a little bit better after our chat today.
Yeah.
But you wrote this book. When did you write this book?
So it took about 3 years from... research and interviewing my students and stuff, and then
it was all in Cork
so it's all Cork
to support your own lads,
Cork people, and then a UK publisher that's part of Hachette took it, and it came out in 2018, and you can get it in Waterstones, Easton's, you could order it at your local library.
Any more books coming down the line now?
Oh God, I always get asked that, and I haven't got the time or energy. It's quite stressful writing a book.
I can imagine.
I suppose inside here, you're going to find everything you need to know about dyslexia and how to be able to help a child that has dyslexia, you know?
Yeah, because it goes through all ages, so from primary all the way through to secondary.
Mm.
And parents or anybody, teachers as well, can just dip into it from where they're at the moment and how they can help. And actually, the publishers brought out the audiobook version this year. So if...
Are you the narrator?
Lots of people ask me if...
You've got a nice voice, yeah, thing, so...
Yeah, it's not Cork.
I am a North Sider, though.
Yeah. But I often thought, like, you know, if we did a book, you know, who'd narrate our book, you know?
You'd probably have to do it yourself, wouldn't you? No, they got an actor. They got an actor do it. Yeah.
Another thing, before we finish up, I just want to ask you about some of the services you provide for people with dyslexia. Can we run through a few of them?
Well, God, don't inundate me because I'm full.
How you can help people on a one-to-one basis.
Yeah, I would do one-to-one, and mostly I'm working with the older students, junior cert, leaving cert. So I would look at exam, study skills, and particularly the short-term memory thing at that point, because we don't work on spelling and reading. You know, we focus on that in primary, then secondary it's all about multisensory learning, time management, helping with English, but any subjects. I can't do Irish though, or maths. But any other subject, they could come along and go, I've got a test coming up, I can't get this into my head. And we go, okay, so what strategies should we do? Should we do mind map, flashcards, bullet points?
Mm.
Should we test it on a whiteboard? Should we do post-its? You know, we'll just find different creative strategies to help. And also, obviously, dealing with the self-esteem. So, it's their space. Mm. So they can have a rant about teachers.
Mm. Yeah. Or even coming to that kind of breaking point where the mind won't leave it see beyond anything. I used to hit this wall a lot where it was this kind of innate, this mechanism I was after building where I'd come across any form of stress that I just go completely blank and freeze. You know, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, that is hard because obviously when you're more tired and stressed, the dyslexia, that short-term memory thing gets worse and you just go blank in an exam. So again, that's where multi-sensory learning, getting stuff into the long-term memory comes along. But even then, sometimes they go blank. But I would always say to students, definitely when they're actually in their leaving cert, they go into sort of a zone. I don't know if you did. And they just do it and they achieve it.
Yeah, you just do it. That's determination there for you again.
Yeah, it is. They just go into the zone and they do it. And they don't blank. Mm. I've never heard of them ever blanking in the actual exam. But yeah, they get overwhelmed. They get very stressed. They get frustrated. They get, you know, if a teacher asks them to read out loud in class, that's awful for them and things. So, you know, they can ask the teacher, please don't ask me to read out loud. Yeah. All sorts of things like that. Mm. They get told off for forgetting books when they can't help it, because they're forgetful and they might be badly organised. Mm. So, you know, there's some allowances need to be made in that sense.
Right. So, in terms of any kids or parents that are really, really struggling with a child or something like that, if they wanted to contact you, they can go onto your website, which is
dyslexiasupport.ie.
Yeah. And the book, which is At Home with Dyslexia, A Parent's Guide to Supporting Your Child, Sasha Roos. And I will be getting stuck into this book anyway. Trust me, because I'm getting a call into it because I want to understand it a little bit more myself, you know.
It's part of who you are. Yeah. And I think that's the thing about it. That's why we shouldn't be ashamed of it, and we should be able to talk openly about it because it's part of who you are. It's part of how you see the world. It's part of your success.
And the audio side for this book, is it on Audible?
I think so, yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
So sometimes it's easier for me to get it.
Yeah, she's there. Yeah.
So, right. Listen, Sasha, thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you for inviting me.
You know, and I just want to say thank you to my co-host, James.
You did a great job, Timmy. You did a great job.
So, listen, thanks again. And the best of luck with your practice and everything else.
Thank you. Good luck to you.
I'm sure we'll see you again soon.
Thanks, God Sasha.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.